This is Booked on KD&K. Author Casey Ray's book, William S. Burroughs and the Cult of Rock and Roll, is out now on University of Texas Press. Thanks for joining me, Casey.
Gavin, great to be here. Thank you.
Casey Ray is Director of Music Licensing for SiriusXM, professor at Georgetown University and Berklee College of Music, and a sought-after commentator in Politico, Billboard, NPR, Gizmodo, Ars Technica, The New York Times, and Washington Post. He also runs a record label called Lux Aeterna, has been playing in bands since the 90s, wrote about music at an alt-weekly newspaper in Vermont many years back in the day, and then turned to activism, working his way up to CEO of the nonprofit Future of Music Coalition, fighting for musicians' rights, and even lobbying on behalf of community radio. I want to start by saying thank you for your earlier career in policy advocacy, Casey. As we wrap up our membership drive, tell us, why are you passionate about local independent radio stations like KD&K?
You know, I love it, and I had another brilliant, beautiful experience in seeing some of that work bear fruit in a way that, you know, was meaningful to my current life when I did an interview in Tacoma Park here in the D.C. metro area for the low-power FM station that came into existence because of a lot of the work that all of us allies and community media supporters have done for 10 years to get the low-power FM legislation passed. And whether it's a small, 100-watt channel or station, or, if it's a larger broadcast outlet, I think the true independent spirit, the true civic dialogue, and, the true, cultural value comes through the non-commercial airwaves. And so I'm just absolutely delighted every chance I get.
Yeah, well, thank you. Casey Ray is the author of a new book called William S. Burroughs and the Cult of Rock and Roll. For listeners unfamiliar with the controversial writer, outlaw artist, how do you begin to describe him?
Boy, oh boy, Burroughs is kind of a different creature to different people, and I think that's actually kind of the thesis of this book. He influenced so many musicians. This is a medium that he didn't really have much personal affinity for. He didn't claim to be a music fan, and he certainly didn't claim to understand rock and roll on any meaningful level, but yet each of the artists that makes an appearance in this book, starting from, the Beatles all the way to now, has taken away something different from Burroughs. So it's difficult for me to sum him up, but I think that ultimately we're dealing with a visionary author, a visionary thinker, who also kind of was able to conjure a fairly dire vision of human evolution. And I think a lot of what he was driving at in the 50s and 60s has come to pass. And so this book was also an opportunity to use music and the cultural dialogue and that medium to explore other things that are contemporaneously relevant. For example, the sort of rot in our political culture.
So for me, I knew that Burroughs wrote the censored book, Naked Lunch, and counted Kurt Cobain among his famous fans, but I really had no idea what a widespread impact he had on rock music and the counterculture. In addition to Burroughs, the literary figure influencing music, do you feel like you know Burroughs, the man, better now that you're one of his key biographers?
You know, it's interesting. When I started out this project, I really wanted to get buy-in from James Grauerholtz, who is Burroughs' literary executor and was his assistant for many years, starting in the mid-1970s up until Burroughs' death. And Grauerholtz, was intrigued by the project and even said that, boy, I wish I had kind of gotten around to writing that, but because he's a musician. But he challenged me to kind of find a way to establish Burroughs as a person, as a human being, within the icon. Because otherwise, it really is just a Wikipedia page about that time, Patti Smith hung out with Burroughs, or Lou Reed, or Paul McCartney, or the Stones, or, Genesis P. Orridge, or David Bowie, whoever. And that, all of those data points are here, but what we're trying to do in this story, what I was really keen to do, was establish a motivation for how Burroughs came to have the outlook that he had, which in some ways is tragic and in other ways is visionary, and how that appealed to other artists who may have come from their own kind of personal traumas or life trajectories that lended themselves to feeling like outcasts in whatever time period era they inhabited.
Casey, let me ask you to read a passage from the book, William S. Burroughs and the Cult of Rock and Roll. I want to have you share from page 59 about what creative absorption meant to Burroughs.
Yeah, okay, so this is the Dylan chapter. The section says, "In an age of instant communication, fear becomes weaponized and ever more contagious. In Burroughs's view, the job of an artist is to subvert this malignant apparatus with the tools at one's disposal." It is tempting to dismiss all of this as the fantasies of a drug-addled mind, but Burroughs was a serious student of Mesoamerican anthropology with a focus on linguistics, and his studies took up much of his productive time while in Mexico. Such investigations form a natural extension to Burroughs's lifelong fascination with the mechanics of power and mass influence, from the Maya to Scientology to mind-blasting hard rock acts like Led Zeppelin. He ultimately came to see his mission as a fight against the forces of control. No wonder, then, that so many creative outlaws have been drawn to him. Throughout his life, Burroughs was distracted by addiction, run-ins with the law, family drama, and later, a seemingly endless parade of hangers-on. Yet he maintained remarkable focus, spending long hours writing and revising, dreaming and experimenting. It is here that he found true freedom. Creative absorption, much like an orgasm or junk rush, temporarily eliminates worldly concerns.
Author Casey Ray reading a passage from his new book, William S. Burroughs and the Cult of Rock and Roll, here on KD&K. Was part of the appeal with diving deeply into the stories of Burroughs and rock music relating yourself to that idea of creating an altered state and a new point of view in the face of a broken world?
You know, I've always been interested in the idea of the evolution of consciousness, you know, and what it is to be conscious, to be human. But sure, yeah, when you know, this book started to come into shape, you know, we were, as Americans, going through a fairly seismic, you know, shift in our political reality that is still playing out. And, you know, the thing about Burroughs is that, you know, he's darkly prophetic. His actual creative technique in the 70s, in the late 60s and early 70s, the cut-ups, he looked at as sort of a divinatory method. Brian Geisen, his artistic compatriot, who actually stumbled across the cut-ups and evangelized them to Burroughs, said, "We perform cut-ups until the machine arrives." I think about the machine as being the internet. I mean, we live in an era of rejuxtaposed media artifacts. Everything is a meme and everything is a mashup. And even more, you know, frighteningly, this has been weaponized. And here you have, you know, the truly Burroughsian conceit. I'm paraphrasing here, but Burroughs said something to the effect of, in the future, information will be communicated electronically as small snippets of text, word, and image rearranged. And again, the weaponization of that, the weaponization of memes, the universe of 8chan, you know, the darker corners of the internet, have kind of revealed that there's this entire, you know, kind of culture that we didn't realize existed that is very similar to some of the stuff that Burroughs predicted. Or dreamt up in his literary fiction. The Wild Boys, for example, and their call to smash the citadels of the Enlightenment really just reminds me of these edgelords, you know, self-styled edgelords of the late 2010s. And you know, some of that stuff is incredibly scary and prescient. And it's interesting to have the opportunity to discuss that within the context of, you know, what is ostensibly a music book, you know, a story about how musical culture evolved and developed. But as I looked further into the actual relationships and correspondences, you know, with the musicians and Burroughs, whether it's Burroughs as a personal figure in their lives or a source of inspiration or a roadmap to creative exploration of, you know, certain kinds, you come to understand that influence has a dark side. And it's unsurprising because Burroughs himself, in his personal biography, he's a fairly checkered individual. And I think his fearlessness and willingness to sort of exist in those darker realms of the psyche is the fuel for these nightmarish visions that we're actually in many ways now collectively experiencing.
Well, I got to have you unpack a couple things. First of all, explain what an edgelord means for folks who are not familiar with 4chan or those kind of
I'm not
Reddit.
Really sure that I know exactly, but it's what a young or fairly young and almost predominantly male group of sort of online antagonists call themselves. They're trying to just break the political system. They're trying to undermine any kind of they're trying to undermine the institutions of liberal democracy. As a strong supporter of those institutions, it really gave me the creeps writing this book at times, because I was realizing exactly how much William S. Burroughs was scrying through his through what we assumed was works of creative fiction. But visionary minds like this don't come along very often, and whether you agree with their politics or their lifestyle is kind of irrelevant. I put William S. Burroughs in the same pantheon as like William Blake in terms of his prophetic vision.
Well, and talk really quickly about the cut-up technique. You think it's connected with songwriting styles and even remix culture nowadays. But you also have said that you see Burroughs' influence as almost subliminal at this point, right?
Right. As you get further away from the the sort of impact zone of influence, the folks who were directly influenced by Burroughs and his methods, like David Bowie, for example. David Bowie seeded this entire other universe of art making within music. And I think that what we have now is a sort of trickle-down effect, the atomization of Burroughs's creative methods and outlook. So the cut-ups, is essentially, on one level, it's like a get-out-of-jail-free card if you're a songwriter stuck in the rut. The idea is that randomness, can kind of produce serendipity. And as a creator, even if you continue to hone whatever that work is, you can benefit from that. You can exploit that serendipity. Or, cut-ups can be, like I said before, more of an occult method. And I think that Burroughs is fundamentally an occult mixed media artist, right? And I think that a lot of folks took away that part of the influence. And, for example, David Bowie was both interested in what he could do to sort of break through creative log jams, but he also had a predisposition to wanting to affect change in external reality by being a change agent himself. And, that's the sort of engine behind cut-ups. Burroughs posited that there's a intelligence working below the surface of your subconscious that can be revealed through this method. But in practical terms, the internet is a cut-up. In practical terms, remix culture is essentially making use of juxtaposition, to create some sort of aesthetic impact. And that's why Burroughs shows up not just in, rock and roll genres, but, you find him on hip-hop records. He's been sampled so many times, and I think that recursion is very much in keeping with Burroughs' outlook. When you cut something up, it's also a process of deauthoring, and the internet is essentially an engine of deauthoring.
And he was interested in how artists could use music, even specific frequencies, right, to alter consciousness. This book, for me, was a dark experience, but also fascinating. I mean, this is a man who shot and killed his own wife in front of witnesses and got away with it. But he also had a Midwestern politeness that surprised many of the artists who sought him out or tracked him down, finding him inviting. You have sections in your book on his interactions with the Beatles, Bob Dylan, David Bowie, Patti Smith, Jerry Garcia, Sonic Youth, Kurt Cobain, and others. What do you think led so many major rock and roll figures to cross paths with him and ultimately be influenced by him?
Well, I think the outlaw mythos is part of it, right? You mentioned that he shot his wife, and Burroughs didn't forgive himself for that, even though it was ruled as an accident and may very well have been an accident. They were five sheets to the wind and supposedly played a drunken game of William Tell. And Burroughs, who was normally a cracks marksman, didn't make that shot. And, you know, it's a terrible, horrible thing. And I think that in some ways it hardened Burroughs's existing or nascent misogyny. And on the other hand, though, he had a very close relationship with his wife, Joan Vollmer. I think it was a codependent relationship. They, you know, abused drugs and alcohol and were probably not great parents. But at the same time, they were very much, they had a bond. Burroughs's bond with her, you know, had limits because he was also a homosexual. And I think a lot of, you know, sort of the way that he chose to live his life at that time in the 50s and 60s was fairly radical. And I think that that kind of radicalism, that anti-establishment attitude, also is attractive to a huge subset of the musicians in my book. So I'm not letting him off the hook for any of that stuff at all, but I do also think that at the end of the day, it comes down to the quality of the work. And the people who, you know, didn't just seek him out to hang out with the Pope of Dope or to, you know, get cool kid points or whatever, the people who are really interested in Burroughs and did actually take something of, you know, of influence from him really responded to his work, whether that's the creative methods or the cut-up novels or Naked Lunch with its sort of, you know, psychedelic grotesquery. Or, you know, if you're Lou Reed, for example, the book Junkie, which I think is the first time you get a slice of life, street reportage kind of flavor coming from the CD Underground, and you can see a direct relationship from Burroughs's writing, early writing, to, you know, Lou Reed's work in, say, the Velvet Underground. So a lot of different reasons for different musicians to be magnetized and influenced by Burroughs, and that's what I set out to explore.
He was on the fringe in so many ways, traumatized as a gay youth, battling censorship and obscenity laws as an author, wrestling with addiction, of course, through much of his adult life. But he had significant artistic impact on these major rock stars over the last half a century. I mean, one of the things I realized in researching this interview, even just searching your book online, is that it fits at the public library and in the book section at Target. And I wonder if that's another part of what made this a fun project, sort of the link between the mainstream and the macabre with Burroughs as your prism.
Well, that's kind of like, that's kind of where I live, I guess. you know, this book has been kicking around in my head. I didn't even realize that. I didn't set out to write this. I don't sleep with a copy of Naked Lunch under my pillow. Like a lot of folks who discovered the Beat Generation writers, it happened when I was like 19 to 23, probably, with peak Beat Generation years for me. You know, but I'd always been interested in what I intuited as this influence from Burroughs that would show up in all kinds of other areas in creative life. And as a creative person myself and as a person who sort of, you know, loves all the artists that I wrote about in this book, you know, I started to collect those impressions. And at a certain point, I realized, you know, there might be enough for a book here. So I might have been done with Burroughs in my mind, but Burroughs was not done with me. And at a certain point, you know, it gets to where you have to set about writing it down. And I'm just really glad that there's been such a great response to it. I also think it's interesting that, yeah, it satisfies a few different agendas. You know, if you want to read a music book, it's a rip and yarn and there's great stories. If you're looking at, you know, if you're interested in the evolution of media communications and influence, there's also a story there for you. And if you're a Beat Generation aficionado and you have a abiding interest in consciousness exploration, well, hopefully there's some satisfaction there too. That's like a lot of promise, and I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. But I, you know, at least I was able to get the contents out of my head, I guess. I'll leave it at that.
Well, what do you consider the essential reading for someone who wants to experience Burroughs for themselves in his own words? We've talked about Naked Lunch, Junkie, and Wild Boys. Aren't you also a big fan of his other kind of essays and other collected writings?
For sure. Actually, I probably gravitated more towards his essays and, you know, I think transcribed public appearances and interviews and stuff. And those have been collected in two key books. The Job is one, and The Adding Machine is another. There's also a William S. Burroughs sort of compendium of all of that, too. I can't remember for the life of me what it's called. Actually, it's on my bookshelf. No, it's not. Anyway, so that covers a lot of ground in terms of his overall thinking and outlook. And he has some fascinating ideas and theories, and a lot of them seem kind of borderline crackpot. Burroughs was also sort of he had a profound interest in pseudoscience and Fordian. And I don't know if he actually, took it all seriously, but again, that kind of presages the whole conspiracy culture that we can't seem to escape from. In terms of his works of fiction, I definitely think that Junkie and Naked Lunch would be two great places to start, because Junkie gives you a sense of that sort of hard-boiled vernacular, reporting on what was then the seedy underground of the 1940s and early 50s. Whereas Naked Lunch gives you a taste of the expat Burroughs living in Tangier, Morocco, which substitutes for this sort of magical realist realm interzone filled with drugs, debauchery, and the rest. And giant talking centipedes.
As much as you're a fan of his work and an expert on his influences now, you kind of addressed this already, but is there still a part of you that remains sort of tuned to how dangerous he seems? I mean, do you have any hesitation in glorifying him, given the shootings?
I have nothing but hesitation.
The fear. Hesitation. I mean, isn't there also a fear that exposure to his years as a junkie could actually influence someone to try heroin?
I asked that question in the book, particularly in the Kurt Cobain chapter.
Right.
Would Kurt Cobain have, tried heroin if he hadn't been so into William S. Burroughs? And it's like, well, yeah, there's still Iggy Pop, and there's still Keith Richards, and he still lives in the Pacific Northwest, so probably.
Right.
But there is something to be said for glamorizing, this stuff. And I didn't set out to do that, and here's an important thing. Neither did Burroughs. As a matter of fact, he vehemently rejected any accusations that his work could serve as an enticement to do hard narcotics.
Mm-hmm.
And, I have to agree with him, because if you read, the books that I just mentioned, or any of his books, which always do return to the theme of addiction as a metaphor for a larger metaphysical enemy that he calls control, you get the impression that this is not a happy, cheerful lifestyle. This is grim, and it contains many, many ravages, psychic and physical.
Absolutely.
And so I don't know that it's an enticement or an advertisement to try drugs. However, one thing that I am happy about is presenting somebody who was a visionary thinker in the 20th century to a new generation of folks who may not have been aware the degree to which he influenced the art that they know and love. So in some ways, I see it as sort of like an art history piece. And I think that that's important to capture. And I was happy to do it in a way that I don't think had been done before.
Mm-hmm.
So now, if you're trying to understand Burroughs' significance to the development of 20th century arts and letters and mixed media, here's a new sort of window through which you can do that.
Well, and obviously, drugs were a key ingredient in rock and roll, let's be honest. So we only have a couple of minutes left, Casey. I'm just going to mention that we will link on kdnk.org to this wonderful annotated playlist you published for the book, just a small selection of songs by artists influenced by Burroughs, and we'll link to that. I'm speaking with Casey Ray, author of the new book, William S. Burroughs and the Cult of Rock and Roll, out now on University of Texas Press. One reviewer calls your book an important addition to the always growing library of rock music literature. And I want to ask you one last question. Do you have other favorite biographies or autobiographies that you consider essential rock music literature? I mean, you've now been, by some critics, added to this list of these writing one of these great biographies. So what are some of the other books that you would send us to go and check out once we've finished William S. Burroughs and the Cult of Rock and Roll? I know you're a well-read guy.
It seems like all I get to do now is read for research. So,
right.
Ninety-five percent of my reading time now is devoted to my upcoming book. But looking at the sort of literature that inspired me in music writing, there's a book called Electric Eden that I absolutely adore. It's by an author named Rob Young. had to move something on my shelf to see it. Rob Young, Electric Eden, and this actually charts the development of the folk rock and the psychedelicized mystic folk rock of the British Isles, you know, in the period after World War II when the UK started to develop a folk culture, right up straight through, you know, folks that you may whose names you may recognize, like Fairport Convention and Pentangle, and all the way to now with the freaky hairy bands who are trying to emulate something of that style. So I absolutely love that. There's another book of music journalism by a music writer that's been around the block. His name is Nick Kent, and that book is called The Dark Stuff. And so, you know, it pairs well with the Burroughs book because these are folks who are definitely on the fringe of society and the human experience. So that's a really great one. There's probably more, but those are two off the top of my head.
Thanks. Yeah, put you on the spot. Casey Ray, brand new book out, William S. Burroughs and the Cult of Rock and Roll on University of Texas Press. Really a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks again for your career of work, you know, representing musicians from a policy standpoint, and you know, the rights of songwriters and all these different angles that you've taken on this, and now giving, I think, much of rock and roll fandom a glimpse into something that, you know, some dots that had not been connected. So really excited to talk to you, and congrats on the book, and look forward to seeing what you put out next.
Thank you so much.